Welcome back to our first Port of Call podcast series. This is where we interview Practice Forte's esteemed professionals and understand why they are the first port of call for clients in distress. Today, we have with us Ms. Sylvia Tan. Sylvia is a registered counseling psychologist and clinical supervisor with the Singapore Register of Psychologists. She has been a counseling psychologist since 2002 and has worked across various settings such as psychiatric outpatient clinics, child protection services, non-profit organizations, and family court systems in Australia and Singapore. Now, in private practice, Sylvia continues her mission to support children and families undergoing divorce and separation. We're so glad to have you here with us today. Sylvia, to start, please share with us a bit about yourself.
Thank you so much, Louie, for inviting me to this podcast. Thanks for your introduction. Well, I've been a psychologist since 2002. I did my training in Australia. I went there to do my studies in 1995, and I ended up staying there for 19 years. So that's where I did my undergraduate studies and my master's degree. And I stayed in Australia to work as a psychologist for many years before coming back to Singapore. So I came back with my husband and my two girls. So that's my professional life. But on a more personal level, just to share that I have two teenage daughters. My husband and I have been happily married for 19 years, but it's not without any struggle. You know, we nearly went through a divorce ourselves. So I know what it's like professionally, as well as on a personal level, what it's like facing divorce and separation.
Thank you for sharing with us something so personal, Sylvia. To start, let's clarify some of the terms associated with mental health professionals. So what is the difference between a counseling psychologist, a counselor, a psychologist, and a psychiatrist?
Okay, I always ask this question all the time. Okay, psychiatrists, okay, they are medically trained. So they are doctors and they have specialist training in psychiatry. They can diagnose mental health disorders and they prescribe medication for patients with mental health disorders. So they're psychiatrists. For psychologists, we are not medically trained. So I'm not a doctor, but I've got training in mental health disorders and you know, psychologists can diagnose and we can also assess for mental health disorders. The only difference is we can't prescribe medication for our patients. Among psychologists, the different types of psychologists, there's clinical psychologists, counseling psychologists, educational psychologists, you know, it's all different specialty that we focus in. Our counselors are also mental health professionals. I suppose the training is really helping people to overcome emotional issues or relationship difficulties, but they're not able to make a formal diagnosis or conduct psychological assessments as such. So that's the difference.
So we mentioned that there are a few specialties for this. So what inspired you to pursue the specialty of counseling psychology in particular?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned before, I did my psychology training in Australia. Usually for counseling psychologists, they don't typically work in psychiatric hospitals. So at a point in time, I was quite sure that my preference is not to work in a psychiatric hospitals, and I prefer to work on the ground in a community, just people on the day-to-day life. So that's why I chose counseling psychology, because the counseling psychology course has topics like existential therapy, couples and family therapy, child therapy. So these are the ones, topics that I'm more interested in. So that's why.
Now, Sylvia, you have been in this industry for a good 20 years now, even though you don't look a day over 20 yourself. But I can imagine that it can be quite draining. So what has kept you going?
Yes, it's not easy to be in this profession because you do carry a lot of burdens for your clients. And sometimes I do have, you know, sleepless nights worrying about clients who are suicidal or feeling very hopeless. Okay. While I was trained to be a psychologist, I'm also inclined to philosophy and spirituality. So to me, the root of all emotional and psychological and mental distress and even a relationship breakdown is really due to the fact that, you know, there are, you know, disconnected from the source of who they are, you know, who we are. You know, we can be disconnected from our families, and our relationships, disconnected from where we come from, and, you know, disconnected from what we think our life purpose is, and therefore having no meaning. So in my work, I believe in not just treating the person's symptoms, but also to help them become more aware of who they are and come into alignment of their reasons for their existence, you know, and to be alignment to their values of relationships and family, okay? And through that, they can find more purpose and meaning in their lives and make life more fulfilling. So I've seen transformations in people's lives, and I find it really rewarding. So this is what that keeps me going.
Thank you for that. Perhaps to narrow in for your scope of work, what subject matter do you normally deal with?
Bulk of my clients that I see now are children, teens, and adults with mental health issues, with depression, anxiety, and also like early life trauma. But I also do specialize in working with families that are affected by divorce and separation, in particular with children who are impacted by the parents' divorce. So kids may present with anxiety problems, stress, emotional, behavioral difficulties. They may start to resist having access with one parent. So issues like that, I do see. Yeah.
Now, as an affiliate of Practice Forte, you are part of a collaborative initiative called PF Restructure, which deals with the pre-writ stage of a divorce. Now, could you just briefly explain to our listeners what this is?
Okay. PF Restructure, or a pre-writ divorce, is just simply basically a platform or a space for parties to work together with a mediator and also with a psychologist like myself to work on an agreement for the divorce matters without having to go through the court system. So as a term that describes pre-writ, it's basically you reach an agreement before you file the papers. You know, so that way it will help you to cut costs, help parties to cut costs. In the court's term, they call it the simplified track. So therefore, they don't need to go to the court really once the papers are filed with all the agreements laid out in place. So this is basically the idea of PF Restructure.
Now you've mentioned some of the benefits, such as saving costs and time, and not having to go through litigation. Now, I'm just wondering, how would the presence of a psychologist like yourself benefit somebody going through this initiative?
There's two main benefits, really, to involve a psychologist like me to be involved in the mediation process. You know, divorce is not an easy flip of a coin decision, you know. Most people do take a long time to actually come to a final decision about divorce because there's so many conflicting decisions, thoughts, feelings, and even voices from you know, people around them telling them to divorce, not to divorce, go ahead, not go ahead, you know. So it can be a really emotionally draining, confusing time for most people. So speaking to a professional myself is really to help them, you know, to talk through certain things about, to help them understand perhaps what are the real problems in a marriage. Is it a problem that is solvable or not? Is it a workable solution between both parties, you know? Or is it something their own personal issues that they could, if they resolve it themselves, within themselves, perhaps the marriage could be improved. So my role as a psychologist is really to help them to, able to help them to look at what's the root of the problem, right? And also to see, is there a remedy for it, for the solution? Have they tried this and all that, you know? And if all else fails, then perhaps through talking, after talking all of these, exploring with the client, then they probably could feel they're more ready to go ahead with divorce. What worries me is sometimes people go make decisions out of their emotions, coming from a place of being so hurt and stressed. And you know, like, you know, you heard a saying, never make a decision when you're emotional. Unfortunately, it's often, more than often, these decisions are based on that. So you know, there are huge consequences and implications of people involved in divorce. So I think, you know, I encourage people to be really clear about that you're making it not just based on emotions, but also to rationality and to really clear good decision making, you know, decision that you've, you know, process that you've made before you press a button. So that's the emotional part. And then the other part is the psychoeducational part, which I can provide inputs for. Parents love their children, but sometimes they do argue and disagree in what they think is best for the kids. So I guess with my professional training and my experience with the kids, I can provide them with the, you know, the research and what the social science say about what children need this time. Therefore, the considerations for the parenting plan is really aligned to the stage of the children, right? So you do not put children in situations or parenting arrangement that is not suitable for their developmental needs, per se. So that's my role, and that's all the benefits of involving a psychologist with that expertise to provide inputs for the parents in thinking about it.
Now, you've covered how, as a psychologist, you'll help families going through divorce in the mediation stage. Now, I'm just wondering, during the divorce and post-divorce, how does your work impact them? Does it is there a difference between during the mediation stage and during the divorce stage?
Yes, because going through the different stages brings up different issues. During the divorce stage, actually, it's the most stressful period for parties because there's a lot of uncertainties. The stakes are very high. Everyone is out as though they're in a battle. So my role is really to remind parents that to remind them of the interests of the kids, to keep their children's well-being in mind. So through helping them, it's really to help them to cope emotionally, helping parents to cope emotionally. If children are affected as well, you know, it's also a space for parents to be aware of what's happening for the kids. So when I do work with families who are going through divorce, this is what typically I will do. I will actually help the parents understand what's happening to the child. If the child is, acting out or just showing signs of distress. So through that, I can work with them to come up with some changes in terms of perhaps some rearrangements that may be stressing the child, or even, you know, helping give them some strategies of how to help the child cope and adjust with the divorce a bit better. So this is during. And for post-divorce, it's another stage of helping them to come to terms. I find the work with post-divorce work is a bit better because after the decisions been made, the major stress of the divorce has been, the stressor is eliminated. So I guess the next stage is actually really coming to terms with the divorce. So this is the last part. It's really journeying through with them and just helping them build capacity to bring their life together and move forward.
You mentioned the strain that this places on children in particular. So how does your expertise enable you to reach out to the children directly?
Well, for divorce, it's important for both parents to actually agree for the children to be helped, okay? And that's the only reason, to help the children cope emotionally and nothing to do with helping them with, and not to sort of bring in a mental health professional in to help with the case through the divorce. Okay, so they'll often, with those kind of intent, it's counterintuitive for kids to achieve seek treatment or seek help. So I guess if, when both parents are agreeable for the child to be helped, I can talk to these children directly, you know. At the same time, I also will feedback to the parents and work with the parents together to come up with, to come up with some solutions or strategies to help the child. Often, children really want the parents to understand what's going through for them. Okay, so part of my work is also helping parents to build better understanding and be more attuned to the children. So that in itself will help kids a lot. And to move on and start to make plans for them for the next stage of their lives.
Thank you, Sylvia. So what about children of broken marriages who are already adults but never got a chance to heal or process their trauma?
I do have cases like this. They come in with not with issues with parents, particularly. They come in presenting with having problems with anxiety or depression. When we listen to them, and then the story will always link back to very conflictual family relationships. And they also will have issues with feelings or even resentment sometimes towards one parent, you know, not quite sure how to navigate. They're very conflicted in terms of what they think they should be acting in terms of like the values, keeping up to family values and traditions, but it's in conflict with how they feel towards their parents. So yeah, a lot of conflicted feelings that we have to work through in therapy, you know. And often it's about coming to terms and taking a process of coming to terms with what's happened to their childhood, acknowledging that the trauma that they had, you know, and also letting go of the hurts that they had experienced and received from both parents. So the process of forgiveness, you know, is the last stage of the therapy. So, but yeah, so like I said, they have other issues that come up with like depression, anxiety that can spill over into their adult life, in the workplace, and also in their relationships as well.
Thank you. So my understanding is that communication between a patient and a mental health professional is highly confidential in nature. Am I right to say that?
Yes.
Okay. So however, what if a spouse or child is being abused, but they refuse to seek the necessary help? Can and should you break confidentiality then?
Okay. Yes. Yes, it's highly confidential in nature, but I should have just added that there is limitation to confidentiality. So for the very examples you gave, especially when there are instances where someone is being hurt or abused, you know, or maybe wanting to say that they want to self-harm or suicidal, we do tell our clients that patients that, you know, these information that we cannot keep confidential because people's lives are at stake. Our patients know very clearly up front that there is limit to confidentiality. So therefore, if anything of these instances or examples do come up, you know, we will gently tell them that, look, we do have to break confidentiality in this case because, based on our clause, and also we are bounded by a code of ethics, for a professional code of ethics, and we have to usually do that.
Now, I'm just thinking out loud here. What if the abuse was purely verbal? How would your advice change then?
Okay. Yeah, it's a tricky one because a lot of it is quite invisible, isn't it? Outwardly, you can't see the person being harmed physically, but psychologically and emotionally, the person is harmed. Again, it's about counseling the person. And unlike a person who's physically harmed, I can submit a police report. And this, I would advise them perhaps maybe to seek a PPO or something if they need to. Women or men in such a situation do take a lot of time to actually help them to come to the realization or willingness to leave the marriage. You know, so it's not an easy process. It just takes a lot of counseling to help them through the different considerations and fears that they may have.
Now, let's talk a bit about your work as a principal court family specialist at the Singapore Family Justice Court. So what did this role entail?
So as the principal court family specialist, I was overseeing the implementation of the services in the clinical supervision for the counsellors and psychologists in the team.
Now, the FJC has recently shifted towards therapeutic justice. What is your opinion of this? Do you feel that psychologists have a bigger role to play with therapeutic justice and the shift towards a more collaborative, less litigious and antagonistic form of divorce?
Absolutely. I guess FJC have always taken the stance of therapeutic justice anyway. Ever since I've joined FJC, I've sort of known about that. It's just that we haven't really termed it directly as therapeutic justice. But now that the shift is really to make it across the landscape, whereby there's, you know, encouraging more collaboration between legal professionals and the mental health professionals, you know, so which I think is a very good move. There's definitely a lot more room for practitioners on the ground to think, to work closely together on the cases that and the families that they're helping. So in terms of the role of psychologists to, you know, whether psychologists can play a bigger role with therapeutic justice, I would think so, because psychologists can bring in so many different angles and lens into the case, the family. If the, you know, if we can help with the treatment, the trauma, the therapy, with the families who have been affected, the children's been affected. We can also play the advocacy role in helping families understand about the needs of the children. We can also do the assessment roles. So yeah, we definitely have a lot of skill sets we can bring in to help the case move along under the TJ lens.
Thank you, Sylvia. Now, our next question caters to a more generic demographic. So many people often think that their bad days are just a phase which will soon pass. So Sylvia, how does one really know when to see a psychologist?
Okay, that is a very good question for me, because there are also people who are feeling depressed, I'm depressed very flippantly as well. So actually, I guess when you do have experience a really low mood, you know, completely you couldn't, it really, your work is affected, your day-to-day functioning is affected for, you know, consecutively for 2 weeks or more, and that's when it's probably a good time to come in to see a psychologist, you know. Sometimes they'll come in when they do experience like a major anxiety attack as well, you know, and they could get quite frightened by what it is. So they have gone to the hospital to check, and it's nothing really, it's not a physical problem. And that's when the doctor will say, go and see a psychologist. So often they're sent by a doctor. So I do encourage people to take up the offer. So they could explore what are the causes and the triggers that causing them to have all these emotional distress and anxiety attacks and also depressive thoughts.
I feel like some people might think that all they need to do is to talk to a loved one in order to feel better. And this will also be free of charge and without any social stigma from seeing a mental health professional. Now, why is it important that they actually seek a mental health professional's help instead?
Actually, it's not a bad thing to speak to a loved one. Of course, it's often we do recommend for people to go and talk to someone you love and trust to get emotional support, so long as you feel understood and heard, you know. But sometimes loved ones, you know, you'd be lucky to get a loved one who's really understanding and supportive, you know. But sometimes they also feel the loved ones can be burdened by you know, not knowing what else to do. Because sometimes some of the mental health issues like depression, anxiety, you know, do require more expertise, kind of a way of helping them, the person to get through the problems, you know, the strategies that the loved ones may not know. Coming for therapy or counseling is really a safe space for anyone to come to talk about everything and anything that's on their mind and their hearts. You know, so people like professionals like psychologists, we're trained in evidence-based therapies. So those trainings are very specific to how we can actually help the person to overcome the depression, anxiety. Counselors and psychologists and mental health professionals like myself, we are trained to be non-judgmental, you know, and we are also very good at giving empathy and understanding of all the issues that people are facing. So therefore, you do not feel that you are going to be judged or be ashamed to talk about things as difficult. This is always a solution and way out for the difficulties that people are facing. So yes, I do not discount the value of speaking to your loved ones. They are important, but I suppose the jump to it would be to have a professional to help them through the next stage, which is the more specific strategies to learn and skills so that they could actually overcome their issues better.
Now, in terms of gender, I'm just wondering, is it true that men are more reluctant to seek help from mental health professionals?
Like, I don't have the science, the research thing to back me up. Anecdotally, yes. I do have, I guess, more women clients than men clients, but increasingly there's more guys coming out to seek for help. So it's a good sign, yeah.
That's great to hear. Now, with the pandemic and the constant lockdowns, how has shifting online impacted your sessions with patients?
There are research done about efficacy of online counseling, whether it's like even like telehealth, like what we're doing, how effective it is compared to face-to-face session. There's lots of studies that have shown that it's actually comparable. There's no, it's not like face-to-face is any better. But I do believe in, I think it's important the face-to-face do have more of a, I feel more and they feel better after that. So that's fine. We just have to make do with this. But yeah, I think as far as we can go is human to Zoom. But other than that, AI, I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Unfortunately, our time is almost up. Thank you for sharing your insights and expertise with us. Sylvia, to end off, can you just summarize why you, as a counseling psychologist, are the first port of call for your clients in distress?
Okay. Well, so most people do not like to be in a state of emotional distress. In fact, people, you don't need to be in an emotional state of distress forever, you know? So for many people, you know, having emotional distress can be actually very frightening. And especially when one experiences symptoms like panic attack, they might even have suicidal thoughts, uncontrollable crying, insomnia, and sometimes even paranoia. So coming to talk to a psychologist like me, it's kind of like seeing a doctor for your emotional and psychological symptoms, you know? So the earlier you come to seek help, the faster those symptoms can be resolved, you know? So therefore, that's why I say psychologists should be the first port of call for anyone who's facing emotional and psychological distress.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to check out our other episodes as we interview more of our professionals and understand why they could be your first port of call. For any inquiries, do contact our client care specialist, Sandra, at 6221-3009.